Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Where You From, the podcast where we discuss origin stories and sometimes where you're going as well. I'm Sarah Benincasa, and today my guest is somebody who I first knew as Young Cynic, S-I-N-I-C-K, on Twitter, Michael Arsenault, who I then got to meet in person maybe 2 years before he became a New York Times bestselling author of the memoir, I Can't Date Jesus. I met Michael at an event where we shared our love for Beyonce. He was so funny. We had a great time. And after that, I just was even more of an advocate, I guess, and a fan of what he did. And he has plenty of advocates and plenty of fans. Didn't need me, but hey, you can always add one more, right? He's so funny. He's a native of Houston, Texas. So interesting, so thoughtful. The way he writes is really funny, fast-paced, and pop culture heavy, but it's also very moving at times. I think he has such a wonderful sense of timing and also a really beautiful emotional command when he's writing. So, of course, I wanted to have him on Where Are You From? So he came into the podcast lab at Anchor when I was in New York City for Comic-Con 2018. And we sat down and had such a fun conversation. He's just delightful. So I hope you buy I Can't Date Jesus, the book. But more than that, wait, no, an equal amount. I hope you listen to and enjoy my interview with Michael Arsenault. I am so excited about this guest who I'm talking about like he's not here. He is a writer, an author. I have seen you on stage and enjoyed it. I remember very much.
I don't remember much of it. I remember falling.
It's New York Times best-selling author, Michael Arsenault.
I am so happy to be here.
I've been talking your head up already,
so I'm very happy to be here.
Do you say Arsenault, right?
Yeah, Arsenault.
Okay, because part of me was like, Arsenault? I put some really intense French on it?
I don't do that. Stay in my southern draw away, but yeah.
Author of I Can't Date Jesus, which was New York Times bestseller, and of course the subtitle is great, Love, Sex, Family, Race, and Other Reasons I've Put My Faith in Beyonce. It's about as good reviews as you can get. A must-read collection from a rising unforgettable voice is the blurb from Roxane Gay. On the front, you've got Bomani Jones, you've got Lena Waith, oh my God, Samantha Irby, Melissa Ferry, Jenna Mogg. So many people loved it, but also I will say this to my audience, it's legitimately very, very good. It's
Which
not just because people like Michael.
Professional funny person.
Well, we met, I met this Houston native on a very, on a special day. I don't know what that show was we were on. I don't know why I'm blanking on it.
Was it drunk TED Talk? Drunk Talk?
It was
something with alcohol.
Something, because I was still drinking, because I don't drink anymore, but all my friends do, and I'm a good bartender because I put in the time before I retired and they hung up my jersey at Madison Square Garden. But so I was still full drunk whore phase, which was a lot of my life. And full drunk whore phase. Yes. It was fun. But until it wasn't. But what were we doing? We were doing something at like the Bell House or one of these venues in Brooklyn. And it was fun. And I remember I really liked the people who ran it. So I don't know why I'm blanking on it. But what I do remember is seeing you and being a fan of yours from online and talking to you backstage about you writing a memoir. And I also remember it was the day that the Formation video came out.
Yes, yes, yes. I complained about my struggles in getting the book sold. And then Beyonce just reinvigorated me and made me very happy, as she always does.
There was some aspect of it where there was some kind of Q&A or something. And I remember this was the first time I heard you use the term Baytheist.
Oh, yes.
Which could you define for the audience? It's pretty obvious. But
a Baytheist is just somebody who has, no, it's either or. A Baytheist is someone who hasn't completely accepted Beyonce into their life. Also, more someone, it's not even just not accepting. Like, I don't expect everyone to love her as much as me. Not everyone can be as, I don't know, great about that. But it's someone who actually denies the splendor that is Beyonce. There mm-hmm. are people out here who just continue to not acknowledge that she is everything. Or just extremely talented or like a great performer, a great singer, just refuse to embrace that. Like, who doesn't like Beyonce at this point? Usually a Baytheist who is a terrible person.
For years, I don't know what it was. I was projecting my own Italian-American gender and sexuality issues onto Lady Gaga, onto Stephanie. It wasn't that I didn't like her. It was that I was like, I don't know if this is for me. And of course, it's 100% for me and for all of us. But I remember saying to somebody, I don't know if this is for me, but I I respect it. And I meant that. It wasn't shade. It was for real. I was like, okay. And I have one friend who's not a Beyonce fan, but she's also not a Beyonce disliker or hater. And she's not a Beatheist. She said, I've realized I don't think all of this is for me, but it doesn't have to be for me. And I can respect it because it's more powerful. She's like, it's like a planet. It's not something I can just describe as, oh, I do or don't like this person. She's like, I don't know if I live on this planet, but I respect it. And I was like, that's a very good way of putting that.
I can deal with someone being Gnostic, but I can't deal with a Beatheist.
Yeah, she was being Gnostic.
I can deal with being Gnostic. I can't deal with a Beatheist.
Yeah, Beatheist is kind of like,
But that actually just, and I've been obsessed with her for 20 years now, so... You know, I've tried to give people permission to kind of grow, but at this point...
It's like, you have to get on and come on.
Yeah, I can do a Gnostic, not a Beatheist.
Now, obviously, you are from Houston, Texas.
Yes.
And I've looked up some Houston, Texas facts.
Okay.
Granted, let's take them with a grain of salt, because like all of the facts that I look up...
I'm looking forward to
it. It's
this.
Wikipedia. Oh, yeah. I do give like $1 a month to the Wikimedia Foundation, so I like to think that I helped write these facts.
My friends from Houston are so impressed that I now have a Wikipedia page.
Isn't that the coolest thing?
I have to admit, actually, I did like it. I did enjoy that. But my friends back home who don't really understand media and what I'm doing, they're like, bitch, you got a Wikipedia page. Like,
it's cool. Like, I think it's cool.
It is cool. It is cool.
But then I look at mine is so outdated. It's like, it says that I live in Brooklyn and Los Angeles. It says like all this. It's just not
updated.
I have
no idea who did that for me.
I'm just a fan.
But... they updated frequently.
That's cool.
They updated like my second book title. My best friend told me, and I said,
because some of the editors are like, some of the people who go on Wikipedia and edit it are very meticulous. That's why, like, you'll see when they want to fuck with like a political figure or something, there'll be some like lie that's really funny about there, but it'll get taken down right away because they're very strict about it.
I see that.
It's really cool.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to distract into
No. Okay, so. In 2017, according to our friends at Wikipedia, the population of Houston, Texas was 2.312 million. It is the seat of Harris County.
Yes.
It is the fourth most populous city in the U.S. of A.
Mm-hmm.
And it is 599.59 square miles. So that makes it the ninth most expansive city in the U.S.
Oh, I thought something else about the landmass. And that's like the actual city limits, right?
Because yes, I believe that
massive metropolitan area.
Yeah, and it gets confusing reading. I've been looking at that about Los Angeles as well, because the LA proper is quite big, but then the metro area is huge too. So it's like, this is where my Your Hometown research department just fell down.
Yeah.
All of them that we're looking at. There's so many other people
that's
in this room doing
LA
research.
That's why LA was an easier adjustment for me that when I lived there, and actually why I want to go back.
That really makes sense. So you're in your book, and we're not strictly doing book promo, but I will, because it's a helpful Bible.
Yes.
It's also
it's
funny.
It's very Houston-centered, the book.
It is very Houston-centered, and there is quite a lot of material about your presence in Los Angeles when you were living there. And that makes sense to me, because both of them are metro areas that are sometimes used as examples of like unchecked sprawl, but they're also both very diverse areas.
Yeah.
And going from neighborhood to neighborhood in LA, you really can feel like you're traveling the world. Do you feel like that's
yes,
true in Houston?
You definitely get that in Houston. So even now, Houston is officially, when I read that like a year or two ago,
the most diverse city
in the country.
Yeah.
But even when it was not as, it's always been a big little city, but when it was even small, like when I would drive home and see cows and horses and not like a Taco Bell and CVS and like developments, even back then, it was always one in four and born. And I think because you say Texas, people assume, to be racist, they're like, just Mexicans. It's one thing I realized being in Houston is that it really prepared me for like the rest of this, anywhere else I've ever lived, because Houston is such a diverse place. You can live, we have a huge Filipino population, Korean population, there's a huge Nigerian population, a huge, El Salvadorian, Guatemalan, Venezuelan.
Well, my mom went to visit Houston in the 70s because her godmother, mm-hmm. who I'm going to visit to take to see A Star Is Born yeah. next week.
Oh,
she's 80 and I'm taking yay. Her. I'm flying in. She lives in Dallas now. I'm flying in to take her. But so my mother grew up, you know, single mom on food stamps, small town, New Jersey. And so, but she had this, her cousin, who I call Aunt Jerry, is her godmother, Catholic. I know yeah. you know these. Yes, I know yes. you know the ways. And so, her godmother moved away with my Aunt Jerry moved away with my Uncle Frank to go live in Houston because he got a job, I think working for an oil company or something.
Sounds about right.
And my mom went to, you know, to her, Houston has always been this place. And thus I was raised with thinking of it as this place of like the promised land, like glamorous and special and yeah. different. And she went, I think she went on a date with like some like very fancy young man who was like, I think he was Indian American. His parents were immigrants from India.
I was actually thinking we have a really big Indian population.
Yeah, yeah. So I always like growing up because of my fam and because my cousins were raised there. And so I always had this idea of Houston as being this very kind of cosmopolitan place because even though my mom grew up, you know, less than an hour from New York City, she didn't go into the city. You know, it was a small town, Jersey. And so that was like, you know, that was a big deal.
I didn't kind of in hindsight, I'm realizing certain things, like I would have never thought to use cosmopolitan, but it is kind of a cross between that and like country as hell. It's just very, because I mentioned in the book, you know, it's segregated to an extent like, well, not an extent, it's segregated like most major cities in the country or most places in America, period. But there are a lot of just middle points in the city where you intersect with everyone.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's so many types of everyone. And even when driving, like going home, there are parts of Houston, yeah, you definitely feel like you're in another country. It's just, even though it's so sprawled out, every part of Houston has its own thing. And even with the metropolitan area now, you go to some of the smaller, like little outside towns, those are sprawling and big and diverse now. It's a lot to take in all at once.
It's hard to encapsulate Houston as just one thing because it's not. Yeah. It's many. There are many Houstons, I think, in the same way that there are many New Yorks, even though there are some things that I'm sure you can cite off the top of your head immediately that if you saw somebody do or say, you'd be like, that person's from Houston.
Yes. No, it is. It's, I don't like, even to your point, it's like Beyonce doing, I have to speak to Beyonce, like Beyonce or Solange,
I love that language. Just, I'm not fluent yeah, in it, but I love it.
Like them singing Selena is very Houston. Mm-hmm. Them doing, like Beyonce doing Zydeco is very Houston. Country music feels very Houston. The way she raps is a very specific type of rap. Like the way people from Houston typically rap is this very Houston. There are like all of these varied things, but they do feel uniquely Houston. It is, sometimes I still kind of struggle how to describe it. I worried about with the book. I was like, did I describe it right? It's so many things at once, but when you're from there, it all makes sense to you. But it's kind of sometimes weird explaining it to other people. Even when I went home, I still see people, because someone actually asked me in the No Angel video, do people really ride horses up and down the street like that? Yes. Every time I go home, I see someone on a horse.
Really?
Yeah, that happened.
For real?
Like my neighborhood in particular. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I saw people they were on horses.
What's the name of your neighborhood?
The neighborhood specifically is Winter Village, but the area itself is kind of, it's the way you pronounce it is technically Hiram Clark, but no one says that. Hiram Harm Clark says Hiram Clark. This mm-hmm. is when my cadence and accent comes in. Like the south part of Houston teetering towards like southwest. So that's my specific area. It's all these individual because there's a very long street, Hiram Clark, that kind of like connects everything. So all of the elementary schools or the middle school, the high school we all ended up at, used to call it Hiram Clark High when I went to Madison. Yeah, and
it's like you're talking about when you know, different things you've mentioned, it's all, the word's not melting pot, but I picture like almost like one of those dispensers of I don't even know if the word's mosaic, but you know those like gumball mm-hmm. dispensers? That's kind of what I picture, because I'm like Tejano music, horses, yeah. Zydeco, rap, like country, oil, like.
And it was, this time was like some Mexican guys on horses. The last time I went home, bunch of old black men. Before that, some young black dudes and some Jordans riding a horse. Like,
yeah. I know some Jordans,
like,
is pretty great.
While I was going to Popeye's, and I was like, oh, somebody's on a horse, of course. Like, I didn't even flinch. I was like, oh, like I wanted to see it because I hadn't seen it. I was like, yeah, that's home.
Where I grew up in Flemington, New Jersey, so out in the country for Jersey in the Garden State, it was, you know, there were horse crossing signs. Mm-hmm. We weren't on any train line into a big city, and we weren't on, you couldn't just get on a bus easily into a city. It's like an hour and a half out of the city, and out of Philly and out of New York. So it was in this weird sort of nether region
fascinating.
And it was, yeah. And people, it's where the accent, and I want to talk to you about Houston accents too, but it's the place in kind of what's usually called Central Jersey, where the North Jersey accent, which is more Brooklyn, or Brooklyn derived, turns into more Philly, which is like, you know, pick up the phone and like get your water ice. And it's the place. So people have a mixture of that accent, or they speak the way that I do, which is sort of generic middle American white anchor person from the Midwest, that sort of generic thing.
You were blessed
thing.
With an anchor's voice, yeah. You actually sound, I was going to say you sound so pleasant when we started.
Thank you. I'm trying to, somebody said to me yesterday, you have a very pleasant phone manner. And I was like, you know, when I was growing up, my mom, when I was little, she worked as a, you know, worked at a call center. She didn't work in like, sorry to bother you, called magical call center of revelations, but she worked at a call center, and then she worked from home doing like Gallup polls.
Oh.
And also polling for companies asking like, which kind of butter do you like more, before she went back to college and got her teaching certification. So I think that my aunt was a call center person, manager.
So everyone sounds pleasant in your family.
So we're all like, hi, how are you? Thank you. Sometimes I answer the phone and go, this is Sarah. And people are like, what?
Oh, I love this.
But you have a very beautiful voice. And I know I've never heard. Because I think our accents come out when we're with our people. So because I've never heard you with your family, I've never heard your real accent come out, but it's there.
I don't have as deep a Houston accent as other folks I know. Like I literally, when I posted an interview I did someone from high school, she literally typed out like, man, hold up. I was like, I could hear her in my head. Or like, it's going down. Like it's little things like that, like Beyonce coming down. Like, so how Beyonce talks slow, mm-hmm. if you notice, I tend to talk really fast. Mm-hmm. That's more a reflection of my entire family is from Louisiana. Mm-hmm. So, the reason why, usually sometimes it's a joke that Houston is basically kind of just 6 hours out of Louisiana, but it's part of it.
My best friend was born and raised
I really screwed up the explanation, but.
Oh no, my best friend was born. I'm sorry, I'm talking over you, but my best friend Catherine was born and raised in New Orleans, and her mom was a cocktail waitress who, you know, she was raised mostly by her single mom, and a cocktail waitress who made her way up to be one of the first and only master sommeliers in the country, but definitely in Louisiana. But she's very much from Louisiana people outside, and then her mom, you know, moved into New Orleans, and that's where she was born and raised. But she lives in Houston now, and it was a hard because she, you know, had to go live in Houston during Katrina.
Right.
So she was always like, I don't want to ever come back here. It wasn't because she didn't like Houston. It was because she had the trauma. But now when she told me, she goes, I went on a date with this guy and we're going to go out again. I go, where is he from? She's like, well, he works in New Orleans, but he lives in Houston. I was like, you're going to marry him. And she did. And now she loves Houston. Yep.
New Orleans. I know a lot of people from New Orleans who have had difficult transitions to Houston because New Orleans is such a specific city.
It is.
So like my mom is from Lafayette and like a lot of, so both sides of my family are from Louisiana. So they're all over. I don't know most of them,
but they get to Houston. I'm sorry. I'm interrupting.
Well, a lot of them, my mom was born in Lafayette. Mm-hmm. And so when a lot of people, particularly at least with my family of that era, they wanted to go to a major city with jobs.
Right.
And so, because Louisiana is still one of the poorest states.
And New Orleans still has a lot of hospitality-based jobs, but not a whole... There's industry there, but it's like, if you're in... I mean, this is a very different place, but Asheville, North Carolina, and the Appalachian Mountains, also mostly hospitality-based jobs. So if your jobs... If most of the jobs are tourism-based, if your city gets fucked up, or the weather's bad, or income goes down across the country... Fewer jobs.
Houston has always been like a cheap major city. It has science. It has the largest medical center in the world. My mom's a nurse. Mm-hmm. Oil. It's a lot of science and all that, businesses and all that kind of stuff. Like it's more of that. Like it's not for a creative, to be honest. But it's a lot of opportunity and well-paying jobs for cheap. And even now, though, my mom continuously complains about how everything is more expensive. Compare everywhere else, it's much cheaper. So it's more in sense of, but if you come from a city with such a strong character like New Orleans, you will not like Houston because it's night and day. A lot of people from New Orleans still kind of talk slow. Like, so it's my mom, it's the Opelousas, Louisiana, Lake Charles, Lafayette. They tend to talk faster. And so I have that trait. That's that kind of Creole thing. Because Beyonce, I love, she talks slow. Because that's a Houston thing. it takes a lot for me to literally slow down and speak. Even when I had the broadcast journalism major, I thought I could be an anchor. It's hilarious.
I think you could be, except that you wouldn't be allowed to have an opinion.
See, thank you. That's why I said I couldn't
be
an anchor.
You could do it, but you'd hate it so much.
It was like, I'm Michael Arsenault with the local...
Hello, I have no opinion about this. Let me just... Yeah, you would have to be fake
Funny,
all
though,
the time.
Now that I think about it, I'm miscategorized. Not all people from New Orleans talk slow, because I just came to me. When I was in broadcast, my last class to graduate...
At Howard, right?
Yes. And my professor made me tap my feet to learn how to slow down.
Wow.
Because I remember when I did my first package and they played it for the class, no one in the room understood what I was saying. The only two people who had no issue with how I spoke were the people from New Orleans. And I remember one girl in particular, Cassandra, just like, it sounded fine to me, baby. I'm like, yeah. Actually, when I'm really drunk, I tend to teeter towards like that. Louisiana, like how they talk than Houston. If I'm
It's family.
But if I'm with my friends from mm-hmm. Houston, and particularly my family, there are certain things like, oh, you from Houston. Particularly my brother. He talks fast too, but he's very Houston.
Do you, if you're at a party and you hear somebody, have you had times? Because in New York, like my friend Cambry Cruz is from Texas, and she used to run this group called Tex in the City. This mm-hmm. was back like 10 years ago, where it was just anybody from Texas was invited to come to just like a bar night or something. And I'm wondering, have you ever been at a party or anything like that, or just on the subway or wherever, and heard somebody say something and been like, you're from Houston?
Never have heard anything, but if I see something that, one time someone had on a specific like high school shirt, I'm like, oh, you from Houston? And then greet them. To be honest, most of the people I've met from Houston, outside of Houston, I've tended to hate it, which is sad for me because I love Houston so much and people from Houston. But, and I'm actually talking about more like the snotty black folks. So I am not from a nice part of Houston. It's not the worst. It's definitely not the best.
But that's interesting to not come from the best or the worst, because sometimes there's a pride coming from the worst because you survived. Yeah. And everybody knows you survived. And then there's a pride coming from the best because you're the fanciest.
Well, I will say, no, my high school was hood as fuck. Like, my high school, my area is hood as fuck. It's mm-hmm. just, there are worse areas. So I'm trying to give my parents, you know, not to shit on where I'm from, but it's the hood. Yeah, it's the hood.
Say that you probably endured and saw some things.
I literally shout out Harm Clark multiple times throughout the book on mm-hmm. TV. I am very much
You also talk in the book about how when you moved to Los Angeles, this is so funny talking to you like this, because I, you know, as an author, it's funny when somebody tells you back your mm-hmm. anecdotes. It's so weird. And as a comedian too, but like, I remember where you talk about when you moved to LA and somebody was living in K-Town, in Koreatown, and somebody said, oh yeah, like this person down the street, they killed him and then lit his body on fire. And you were like, you know, I've lived down the street from where somebody got like shot or got killed, but the lighting the body on fire is different.
Yes, that's actually, because
it's more theatrical.
Yeah.
It's very LA.
I literally went back around the corner on Heather Bloom. That was my older sister around the time of Madison that he got shot. I mean, there've been other people who have been shot around the corner since then, actually very recently. It's so weird. Next door, wait, let me not get people in trouble. Never mind. Some people have been shot, yes. So sometimes when I meet people outside of Houston, I take it back. Usually it's okay, but I tend to also meet in like the black college educated circles. I still know that I'm a bit of an anomaly because when they find out what high school I went to or what area I'm from, a lot of the time there's a little bit of snootiness attached to it because they're very well to do or from nicer parts. Or they try to act like they're from Third Ward because everyone acts like they're from Third Ward because of Beyonce mm-hmm. and because that's the one hood that people know of. They're like, oh, I'm from Third Ward. Oh, really? Where? What part? Because there's also a very nice part. It's actually where Beyonce's from, like the nicer part called McGregor. Mm-hmm. It's where more like a lot of the black professionals, again, because of how housing works, the really nice, well-to-do black area is still about a hood. So, you know. But yeah, I write about it in the book how one person in particular was like, you went to Madison, you're from Harlem Clark, and you go here, I'm so proud of you.
Oh my God, that's so condescending.
Yes. She clapped at me. She clapped at me. And so sometimes because I dated a boy from Houston here mm-hmm. and he was like, oh, well, oh, you from there, like all his friends. I was like, what the fuck? I mean, just because he went to a performing arts school, it's like, one of your dads, I'm like, well, let me not say that either. I'm like, well, one of y'all relatives is a drug dealer, so you're not too fancy. For, like, yes. And that's the thing. I think sometimes when people meet me, they think I'm I come from more money than we ever really had. I had burglar bars on my house. So mm-hmm. paint a picture. I'm in the book. My dad looks like Cat Williams.
you describe an uncle as like Rick James.
Yes,
right?
Yeah, Rick James.
Rick James hair. Adjacent, at least.
He still has that hair. He's waiting for me to be rich to take care of him. He suddenly said he always believed in me. A few years ago, it was like, when are you going to work in a building? As he was asking me to burn DVDs of bootleg movies for him. So, yeah, we've come full circle. He's always believed in me. The last bit of advice he said was, my uncle, when are you going to stop doing them bullshit articles? You need to make a movie. Like that dumb motherfucker. What's that dumb motherfucker's name? I hate him. Spike Lee. Shit like that. Yeah, and then
he's giving you notes. It's like suddenly people become. I think that when isn't that true though? It's funny when it's not even our blood. It's like friends or something like that. Not that you or I do this, but there's this tendency in human nature to be like, oh, I was always on their side. Yeah. And you know what? I'll admit. I've probably done that. So it's the same. It's like people, much like myself, like most of the year, I could give a fuck about baseball. But when it's October, I might give a shit for like 3 weeks and then I'm done. But half a shit.
I'm the biggest Astros fan in October.
You know, I'm like all about the Yankees in the October, unless it's like, you know, right now it's like, is it going to Yanks, Dodgers? By the time this comes out, we'll know.
My life would be easier if I dated a baseball player. They have so much money.
They have so much money, and they're handsome, and they're gone a lot. So you wouldn't have to deal with somebody being up in your business.
I have to give my uncle credit. It was actually good criticism. You should get out of media and go write for TV. I was like, he didn't know this. I'm like, you're right. And then my dad snatched the phone and said, he got brain damage. Leave him. Stop talking to my son.
F. Scott Fitzgerald started writing for the movies. I mean, Dorothy Parker started writing for early movies. Like a lot of people started writing for the movies because there was more money. I think, did I just hallucinate? Why did I say that? Like, I'm looking this up
there
now.
There are many things I'm mad about. I'm mad I'm not already doing that, but that's coming. And I'm mad I'm not a rapper.
That could happen too.
I'm hoping. I'm putting it out there.
Like, okay, here's the question. Now I'm like fact checking myself live because my assistant Daniel, I've decided his name's Daniel, he's invisible. My assistant Daniel, who's very sexy, failed to look this up. Fuck you, Daniel. Maybe every episode I'll just make up a different assistant.
I love the name Daniel though.
Hey everybody, you can support this podcast at patreon.com/SarahBeninCasa. I really appreciate it because you're helping me to defray the costs of renting studio recording space, paying for an engineer and an editor, buying snacks for my guests. That obviously is very important. And in return, I will give you some cool stuff. There's some cool thank you gift options, not the least of which is access to the patrons only super secret blog, which you will get a code to access if you contribute. So thank you so much for listening. Thank you for rating highly, for subscribing, for supporting, for telling your friends. And thank you to those of you who are patrons at patreon.com/SarahBeninCasa. I really love doing this project, and I'm so grateful to folks for helping me make this weird little dream come true. Oh, yeah. Dorothy Parker. So she was part of the Algonquin Roundtable, and that kind of all broke up. People got drunk and died and stuff, and her life was very dramatic. But she moved to Hollywood to do screenwriting, and she got 2 Academy Award nominations, but then she was put on the blacklist because she was such a left-wing person. But anyway, what I was trying to say in this roundabout way is that, like, so many of us, I mean, I moved to LA to when my first book got optioned, and I didn't need to for an option, but I knew that, like, okay, if I'm out there, maybe I can go to more meetings. So this was the idea because, you know, I love writing books. I hope I always get to write books, but there's finite amount of money in these books.
Yes, and actually I want to create something where I can showcase Houston in the way I see it, because literally the only thing I can think of from Houston coming from black people are Thea, the short-lived sitcom on ABC,
mm-hmm.
which had a nice theme song, but I don't remember anything else. Thea! out. That's
I remember. I liked it as a kid.
I liked it as a kid. I liked it. I don't. And then Jason's lyric, which I actually hate because those are not our accents. Mm-hmm. Those accents were infuriating. We don't talk like that.
Can you do an example of somebody who is, not to put you on the spot, but
who sounds like
somebody,
Houston?
Somebody who's trying to sound like Houston, but not. Like, you know how some people try to do a Boston accent and they'll be like, ah, pack your car. And it's really over
the top.
I've
actually never heard anyone. Well, Jason's lyric is like when it was wrong, because mm-hmm. that was terrible. But I don't usually hear most people try to do Houston accents because it kind of could be anything. But Drake has been very good at, I was going to say appropriate, but Drake is, I usually call him a fake, I mean, Drake is fine, but Drake is a fake Stonian. He has taken on a lot of Houston-isms. He does it sometimes, particularly on the mixtape that really brought him out. Mm-hmm. There's so many Houston references there.
Interesting.
And reference tracks and stuff. And he still incorporates a lot of it. He does it really well, though, but he's an actor.
Does he have a place in Houston? Does he have like a lot of love
for Houston? I don't
know if he
has a place, but Houston gave him a lot of the basis that which he kind of blew up. Because, I mean, he linked with Bun B from UGK, and he was very, he loves strippers. Houston has a very big stripper, strip club scene. Nothing like Atlanta's, but it's pretty massive on its own. Yeah, so, Houston can be accommodating people. So he took on a lot of the stuff. So there are a lot of things on particularly that mixtape, which I actually liked it so much. I hadn't really heard Houston rap that way, even though he wasn't from Houston, because when Houston had a moment briefly in hip hop with Mike Jones and Slim Thug, they kind of came and went, and that isn't necessarily all the rappers that like I love. One of my favorite rappers is Scarface, and so he's very thoughtful, and I just think he's one of the greatest rappers ever, and he's one of those my sister's 9 years older, so I get a lot from her, but. Yeah, I love Scarface and Bun B. I don't know how we got here. This is me. I'm just all over.
I like it.
My Houston-isms.
We're getting because that's the point. It's learning about your hometown. But I think of you as a writer and as an I'm gonna say online persona, but that is still writing. And it's inextricably linked to, because you're typing things out that are attracting people to read and then to want to learn more about your work. But Houston is so infused with your identity, and that's not true of everybody. Like, you know, and it's not true that everybody is so. There are some people where they have a very distinct voice, but it's not grounded in their place of origin.
I get that. And that's one of the things where sometimes living here, you know, I joke about Harlem and Brooklyn, but I really don't give a fuck. I always make it clear. I'm from Houston no matter what. I still vote in Texas.
Mm-hmm.
I don't.
Thank God. Thank you.
I don't. Yeah, I'm rushing for Beto. I don't care. I mean, I like New York just fine. But everything I do, and as I've gotten older, and even specifically writing the book, I am so informed by Houston, even just kind of being so many things at once. It doesn't shake me as much as it shakes other people, because even just where I grew up, I just already knew I could be so. It's like so much is always happening anyway, even when you didn't think about it, because you just kind of, you know.
You
and
adapt.
I have a lot of good faith in us country folk and our capabilities. And I think sometimes we kind of collectively turn our nose down at the South, where we assume it's so many things. So I'm just very prideful about Houston. I don't think we get, for many different reasons, a lot of the credit. I could go on from like Houston is the first city to elect an openly, first major city to elect an openly gay mayor, not New York or LA. Houston rap, you hear it in so many things, including like pop records, but people don't know because Houston never really had that moment to, and even Beyonce, I'm sorry, I can't help it.
Why are you apologizing? Talk about her all the time. I love her. I remember having, when I was 21 years old, I had a nervous breakdown after the Survivor album came out, which I'm not linking it to the Survivor album, but I will say that listening to the Survivor album helped me a lot as I recovered from an agoraphobic nervous breakdown, and dropping out of school and feeling depressed and suicidal and stuff. And like listening to Destiny's Child was very meaningful to me at that time, and had been since Writings on the Wall. And I remember having, when I was, even before that, I was like 20, I had an airbrushed DC3.
I love this.
Street purse.
I love this.
That I obtained on the street. Must have been in New York. This was before I dropped out of school. It was purple and it was a handbag and it had All Three Girls airbrush on it. And it was very good. And Beyonce was wearing a ring and it had a rhinestone affixed to the bag. I know. I can't believe I don't have it anymore. I'm upset. And I brought it with me to a Madonna concert. Madonna was on the Drowned World tour. And I brought it to the Drowned World Tour. I don't know. I brought it everywhere. I don't apologize for talking about Beyonce ever.
I love Madonna. Her Instagram is embarrassing, but I digress.
she's grown. She's very old now.
You do remember Daria?
Yes.
Val, as in Val. That's Madonna. Yeah. I'm lifting her in prayer, though. Ooh, I'm sorry. Back to Houston. What were we going to ask?
I was saying you never have to apologize with making allusions, references, or explaining grounding things in Beyonce metaphors. Because her whole life. I was listening to Solange's last album on the plane, which is so beautiful with like the mini Ripperton kind of influences and things she does with her voice. And I was thinking about it. I was like, man, this like relatively small nuclear family, right, has given us a lot.
Beyonce, my brother went to middle school with Solange.
Oh, wow.
Her first husband was in my high school class. That's what, like, Houston's a big little town.
Mm-hmm.
And there's so many, I went to Beyonce's middle school, but like I had just missed her. It's very sad when I
And she was already like a performer. And I was like, have you never met her?
Well, I met her. I am actively working to get the book to her. I do know that people in her orbit are aware of the book's existence.
Oh,
but
sure.
She has been on tour, so.
She's been busy for a few years.
But there are people in her orbit very close to her or related to her that are aware of the book. So we're just got to
keep
being
great,
hopeful that she gets it. Because actually one thing, when people from Houston read it and have been telling me how happy they are, because it's just little things like this place, Timmy Chan, like a Chinese carryout in the hood in parts of Houston. It's little things like that, or like referencing high schools or stuff that doesn't things that don't exist anymore, like Astroworld. Like Astroworld now is a Travis Scott album, but when back then, that was actually my first job. It was this big theme park. I took the 15, which people used to call was like the Harn Clark, or some people even say with the accent Hearn Clark bus, and we would all work at Astroworld or Waterworld. Now it's gone, but
you just crossed yourself.
I write
I
about
love
the
it.
Rodeo. Like it's
funny too, because there's article like in the same way that Beyonce has conveyed elements of Houston culture to the world without people knowing it was Houston culture. So then there are these articles that come out that are like, why does Beyonce talk like that? Why does Beyonce rap like that? And people are very fascinated. And it's interesting because I feel like you are carrying Houston culture to the world, but it's but people know it's Houston because you're explaining. You really, I feel like, and must function in some circles as an explainer of where you came from or an ambassador or something.
Yeah, you know that what's made me really happy, again, is that people from Houston are, like, Houston proper, and that's no shade different from the surrounding, but people from Houston proper are just really happy about how I've written about it.
That's cool.
It's even people who, you know, necessarily didn't grow up like me and might not know everything that I'm talking about, but they're just some stuff that I say, they're like, yeah, that's still home. Not my part of home, but that's home. So that's made me really happy because, again, I really am a big advocate for Houston. Like, I'm actually smiling.
Yeah.
I think about Houston. I don't go home enough a lot. When you read the book, you know, you might have an idea why. Family is challenging. But I really do love Houston. I'm, like, happy when I'm there. I don't like the heat, but, you know.
Houston humidity is its own beautiful thing. As someone who grew up with curly hair in a town in Jersey full of like straight haired people, which is humid enough. When I would go to Houston, my hair would get it's big anyway, but it would get so big. I was like, this is, and sometimes I remember, it gets humid in Jersey. Jersey's like a lot of swamp and stuff, but
yeah,
I'd be
does.
In Houston and I'd be like, I feel like I'm breathing water. This is amazing.
Oddly, the weather in this area reminds, and DC too, it reminds me
DC,
of Houston, how it gets so humid. I hate it. Except you don't have centralized air and you're not in a car. This is oppressive.
Yeah,
but the heat in Houston is awful. I went back home for the book event and I was immediately reminded of how painful it is in the summer.
What was it like being back there in your hometown for a book event? And with a book that's so grounded in your hometown.
It was... I kind of felt away at first because a lot of this... I was getting more, like the Barnes & Noble in Houston in the gay area, I tried to do it, told us no. I was like, bitch, fuck the fucking Barnes & Noble at the Grove said yes. Why are you telling me no? It actually worked out because we ended up doing like a lovely indie bookstore. It was a great crowd. It was
It's not Brazos, is it?
It was Brazos Bookstore.
Oh, good. Yeah. I hear great things about Brazos.
A friend that's from Houston that's a news anchor now, she recommended it to me.
That's good because you brought them business that they need.
Yeah.
Even though it's very popular, I don't care if it's the most popular, coolest. I don't care if it's Powell's in Portland, Oregon, which has a bunch of branches, is very popular. A brick and mortar bookstore needs your help. So it's good that you did that.
They were very happy and very Houston in how they treated me. Like, it was very, if you're from Houston and you're doing something well, I want to rush and rally behind you and support you because it's just, we all have a pride. I mean, everyone has a pride about their, where they're from, but I just have a very specific, and I usually see that from other Houston people, a happiness. Mm-hmm. So it was nice. I think a lot of things happened. Like, I got to be in the paper in Houston, which was really cool. I was one of the news stations that I used to, my favorite news station. But growing, Channel 2, KPRC, I got to be on that.
This is huge. I mean, it's huge. It's exciting. It's also fraught, right? Yeah. With memory. And I think that when you come home as a hometown hero of sorts, there are also sometimes resentments, stress, difficulty, worry. Am I too big now? Or do people think I'm big timing them? Which is what we always say in comedy. Did he big time you?
My stress was kind of mostly attributed to the fact that my mom just is not approving of what's all happening. And so it was the first time that literally since 18, when I went away for Howard, the only person up until just recently that picked me up from the airport and took me back to the airport was my mom. Mm-hmm. This was the first time she wasn't down in baggage claim waiting on me. Mm-hmm. So my mama's boy kicked in, and I was a little sad about that. And then it was a nuts. It just started kind of chaotic. And then I went to Papado's, which is my favorite place. Literally in the beginning of the book, I mentioned how someone that I went to high school with told me.
Yes. Oh my gosh. I love. Yeah. Would you, I'm sorry to put you on the spot. Would you read the dedication? Because I've seen multiple people online tweeting at you or Instagramming you about references. And one of them is this one.
Once an old high school classmate told me at the Papados off of 610 in Houston that I would end up working at Burger King because I had majored in journalism. This book is dedicated to dummies like that who don't know when to shut the hell up. Also, pay fast food workers livable wages.
I love
fun
it so
fact,
much.
I did. Thank you. I did a podcast. He won't hear this. Well, he might hear it. I don't know. it was her brother, and they asked me about it, and I let it go.
Really?
Which this was actually really.
I'm just checking the time.
This was
we're
some
good.
Full circle thing. It was in my neighborhood. They built some office space that I feel like they bought and converted in somewhere I don't know, but they had a studio set up, and so they were very happy that I did it. Mm-hmm. And it was funny because the week before they interviewed Jay Prince, who formed Rap-A-Lot Records, who basically told Drake not to respond to Pusha T. Mm-hmm. If Jay Prince tells you not to do something, you don't, because while people fear folks like Suge Knight or Birdman, Jay Prince is someone I would never want to anger.
This reminds me of my friend Solomon Giorgio, who's a really funny comedian, tweeted something out that was like, the world is a hellfire, but for the first time in 8 years in Los Angeles, I'm not afraid of angering Suge Knight anymore.
I can't believe he's getting like that. But no, Jay Prince is somebody you're afraid of. So it was wild. I didn't realize that they talked to him. So in my mind, I'm like, one dude I went to high school with, we all went to high school, but the one guy literally grew up around the corner from me. Someone else that I went to high school with, they talked to Jay Prince, which is actually a big get in general, but you talked to Jay Prince from Rap-A-Lot Records, and then you talked to me, and they were like, yeah, we don't have we went from Jay Prince to New, and it was in the Houston accents, deep Houston accents, to a New York Times bestseller. They were so proud.
That's
and it
so
was
cool.
Funny, they were talking about high school. They were like, yeah, well, we knew you was gay then, Mike. I was like, I'm sure you knew, but damn, I had a journey. I had a journey, Devin. Stop. Yeah.
I love people will just not necessarily roast you, but people from where you're from.
Oh, they roasted.
Will just be real.
It was a full out roast. It was a full on roast.
I love what you said something, you tweeted something about when you, because so you tweeted something after you did the Breakfast Club, mm-hmm. and you said something I did the Breakfast Club, I did Desus Mero, and I did something else, and they were like, which you've done it multiple Desus Mero multiple yeah. times, right? And then something else, and you were like, and they used to say I forget what you
I was
said.
Niche. Oh, because
I was niche.
My friend pointed out that he said, Jace, I love Jason Parham. New York Times bestseller, and he added me, has been on Fresh Air and The Breakfast Club.
Yes!
That's called Range. And then I quoted it. So I've been, I've told you this before. So I am grateful for the book deal. I really, truly am. I did not get a lot of money up front. My editor believed in me. A lot of people did not believe in me.
No, when I was talking to you years ago, this must have been 2016, 2017? Yeah. 2016. So it was before the Trumpocalypse, but it was on the day of whatever the inverse of that is, would be that, like, I feel like personally my feelings about the day, well, that was probably when Lemonade dropped in as a whole, but like, so my feelings when I found out Trump was elected are like the inverse of when the formation.
No, that's a best way. That's a great way.
I was like the inverse of like, what? Like the best surprise, right? But we were backstage and we were talking at this event and was it Reductress? I don't remember. It was fun though. And we were talking about, you were like talking about how repeatedly over and over again they were telling you it was too niche, it was too small, that you, because you were black, it reduced your audience. Because you were gay, it reduced your audience even more, so that you would be just that this book, which I bought in Denver, Colorado, at, oh my God, this, I don't know why this is making me emotional, but like, you know, I bought this book at Denver, Colorado at an indie bookstore, and it was out very prominently with the other bestsellers.
Oh, I didn't, that makes me fucking happy.
And like, you were, I remember as an author, it really touches my heart to think about the fact that, like, obviously I can't, I mean, I'm, you know, a bisexual white woman. It's like, I'm not from the same category of difficulty.
But you get it. No.
But like, as even if I remove identity shit and just go my identity shit and just go to an author thing, like when you're told, and it's a memoir, when you're told that your story is only going to appeal to the people who either are put in the same category as you on the census.
Yeah.
And then it breaks wide and it hits the New York Times bestseller list and you're in, we have all this range. Like that's so meaningful to me. And that's why, one reason why, besides believing in your work, why I have been such an advocate for it.
You have been amazing. So you actually, you tried to help me get a book deal. So I'm grateful to you for that. Like,
oh,
sincerely.
If I would have been like, here's $1 million.
But you know, I think it was just, it was also I didn't want to write my story in the way that people typically consume otherness from people like me. I've made these jokes, but you know, the Bernie Sanders of '60s, homosexual Ta-Nehisi Coates. But I think ultimately people wanted me to lean into pathology and or overly explain myself in a way that you just assume you don't give white readers the benefit of the doubt to think in the same way that I buy books from white authors. I mean, I bought your book. If I don't know something, I look it up.
Yeah,
it's not like
Google. That's what we do.
So, but the idea is that no one else would want to do that for me. But I wrote a very, I call it Gulf Coast Birdlet as a joke.
I love that so much.
But it is just very Houston. It is very country black. It is, you know, I've been different places, but and thank you for saying that. But a lot of, again, you, to your point, my identity is largely shaped by the city I was from. And I didn't come from a lot of resources. It was very insulated because of just not, if you don't come from money and you're black, you're kind of usually relegated. But I did at least have a mom that didn't make me, she might want a vagina in my face and grandchildren. But
that's how they make them.
She at least had me think, you know, you being black doesn't mean you can't do something. And I actually never, like, I hadn't even really been around a lot of white people until maybe college when I started interning. Shout out to C-SPAN. But I didn't.
You really went all in. You were like, you know what? I've had an absence of white people in my face, so I'm going to intern at C-SPAN.
Yeah,
from Howard.
And I love being there. I'm a political nerd. I'm still trying to get on book TV. I got to figure that out. But I didn't doubt. I had more faith in people. Like I'm aware of the realities of the world because sweet potato Saddam is president. But I don't doubt this idea that if my story wasn't good or funny, I didn't doubt people. So it's really nice that people who are in their 70s are emailing me. Nice white ladies are emailing me.
I picture them with like cardigans.
Someone was knitting a sweater while reading an advanced copy of my book and she tagged me. And she read my book. She's like, I read his book while I was knitting a sweater. And I'm from Texas too, but I didn't get all of the references. But you know, once I'd like Google UGK, it worked out. And I just was like, that's amazing.
Your book has gone like, your book go, like a book can be your letter to the world, and the farther it goes, the more people are exposed to it and the more people relate to your stories. And I think that's a fantastic, that's an important thing.
I mean, I usually lead that I'm a Southern, I mean, sorry. Oh, wow. I lead that I'm like a Southern, right? Because I don't think all of Texas is the South. I don't include the rest of the state, to be honest. Houston is very Southern. Mm-hmm. My family's all from Louisiana. So, and it's like the Gulf Coast. I have a very specific point of view. And I realize even no matter how long it took or I, you know, me being a little better, but not having the initial faith in me and whatever, I knew if I just had the opportunity that I wanted to show, you know, in that type of space, because I'm not going to pretend I'm the only one, but I got a major publisher to put out a book that I, in my actual voice. Mm-hmm. And I knew that meant a lot to other people from those areas who are not typically encouraged, because a lot of people think you have to. I want it to be where you don't have to move to New York to think you have, you know, a book deal, like, or you don't have to center. Like, New York is a great place, I get it. But I wanted to show, like, the Houston stuff, the country mm-hmm. shit, this very specific stuff. Like, don't worry, it has legs. But I mean, honestly, it wasn't as hard, because I genuinely take cues from Beyonce, because even though people don't know it necessarily, so much of her work is from a Houston lens.
And you also, God bless her, did a lot of the advance work for this book.
She really did.
She's so generous. I like to think that since her adolescence, what was it? Girls' Time? Was that?
Girls' Time.
So I like to think since Girls' Time, I think she was even like in elementary. But like, I like to think that she just one day was like, you know what? I need to blaze a path because one day, this isn't a Beyonce impression. I would never try to do one. I just feel like her voice is probably very sexy. And she's like, one day, Michael is going to publish a book, and I need that book to be a bestseller.
I'm covered under her blessings, and I'm just grateful. And I think about, since you mentioned Girls' Time, how Houston's this small again. LaToya Luckett, original members, her brother was in, he went to my high school too.
Oh my God.
But I don't think, like, Houston, it was just, I was so close. I was so close.
I went to the, I had, you know, right, when was the, well, I went to Formation World Tour. And saw, I saw her at the Meadowlands mm-hmm. the last night. I think it was the last show.
Oh, I went to that one.
Were you there? I was there too. And we had done, my mom had got floor seats for me and my sister-in-law as a surprise for her birthday.
Oh.
And we like took video of it. I must have it somewhere where we gave it to her. And she just like, I mean, she's 30 now. So Beyonce's been famous a lot of her life.
Yeah.
So she's just, my sister-in-law just turned 30. Beyonce just turned 37. So since my sister-in-law could start really thinking or caring about pop culture was probably like 10, which was probably like writings on the wall, right?
Yeah, so she's just been, oh, and why she's always on beat is because she dances like a majorette. She dances like, in my mind, because she went to the performing arts school. She went to HSPVA, which I did not get into. My parents ruined my, with their drama, as I mentioned in the book, but could have been besties then too. Well, she had quit by then. But in my mind, if she stayed another year, she would have done what a lot of people who go to HSPVA do. They would have, she would have went to the school and then did like been a majorette at one of the high schools, mm-hmm. like maybe mine or like something else, because she dances like that. That's why she's on beat, because they're always basically on beat how they dance. That's just another little, it's not necessarily specifically Houston, but
it's like,
she danced like a twirler captain, yes.
I used to be a baton twirler when I was a competitive baton twirler. And that world of, one thing that I love about Beyonce is, of the many things, is like, I didn't have parents who were focused on me being the best star. They were more into academics, but clearly she came from parents who were very focused on her performance, and she was very focused as a child, and so was her sister, and so were the people around her. And there's something about her that reminds me very much of like being in dance class with lots of girls, and
yeah.
the girl who was like the most focused and mm-hmm. who was the most, and who just had that star power. There were those kids, and it wasn't everybody. Some people were just there like me and be like, ah, but then you would notice the ones who
were like
meant it.
Yeah.
If you ever, I don't know if you ever want to have kids or not. I'm not your aunt, so I'm not going to bother you about that. But if you did, would you ever name one of them Beyonce or Giselle or Knowles? You could have triplets, Beyonce, Giselle, and Knowles. To be your mom and put pressure on you.
I would probably find a way to make a Beyonce reference. Maybe one not as obvious. So mm-hmm. perhaps I would take one of her kids' names as a middle name or something. Mm-hmm. Knowles, I'm intrigued by.
Knowles is a good name.
But we'll see.
Because she's Giselle, right? That's her middle name?
Yes.
She might have two middle names, though.
Beyonce, Giselle, Knowles,
Carter. She Catholic?
I don't think they grew up Catholic.
No. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
They were by most of the French Creole that moved, like, they ran away from Catholicism as soon as they could. Mm-hmm. Like most of my mom's family, she's just one of the one that just stayed. But mm-hmm. yeah, they all fled. Because we have a really big, fun fact, a really large mega church, Windsor Village, Methodist church. But the pastor and was very good friends with George W. Bush.
Wow.
And now he's since been like, he has some tax trouble or some shit. He's got some feds after him. But yes. I remember my mom being so angry when he endorsed it because George Bush actually stopped by my mom's hospital for when he was campaigning, mm-hmm. and he wanted to meet everybody, and she refused.
Wow. Your mom's tough.
She is actually very tough. And he was like waving. She's like, huh. Like that nice Christian.
I respect that she did that.
I'm like, Mom, he's probably going to win. She's like, no, I don't care. He's a terrible governor. And she wasn't wrong. Because when I don't know how we got, but I'm doing this. Because when everyone says Texas can't be Democratic, like when I was born, Ann Richards was the governor.
My role model growing up was Molly Ivins as a writer. I wanted to be a journalist. And so that's what, and she was a journalist, got fired from the New York Times and was great. And she, wrote so much, and she was not born in Texas, but she was very Texan. She was raised there, I believe. And so she was very Texan and like, but yeah, it was Ann Richards, and I thought about Molly Ivins, and then I briefly worked at Planned Parenthood when Cecile Richards was in charge, and like, so but yeah, Texas can be. I mean, right now it's a very interesting time. Like, my best friend is volunteering to do data entry for Beto. She's an at-home mom. She's a lawyer, and she's volunteering to do data entry for his campaign, and people are like, well, Texas can't be flipped. Look, it can be. I don't know if it will be, but it can be. It is within reason. I don't know if it'll happen.
They're very successful with voter suppression.
Yes.
But Texas is a nation unto itself. Like, mm-hmm. I would say Ann Richards, it reminds me of Texas, like certain type of woman. Beyonce, so specifically Houston. Because, mm-hmm. Dallas, I usually trash Dallas because it's a terrible place.
I was going to ask you, but I shouldn't end on a negative note, but I was going to ask you in our last few minutes, because we really just still take like 5 more minutes of your time, but like, what are the, for you as a Houstonian, your Houston, in your view, what are the rivalries or perhaps friendships, kinships of Houston and other cities?
We don't do Dallas. At all. Like, I'm not even a huge football fan. Like, I mean, football is such an integral part of the culture, but we don't do football. Like, I don't like the Dallas Cowboys just by default. Mm-hmm. I like one of the quarterback. I would fuck him, but I would hate fuck him. Don't do Dallas. I think Austin is overhyped as like this liberal bastion of Texas. I'm like, really? I guess. San Antonio, I'm fine with.
I like San Antonio. They have a nice book festival.
We're fine with San Antonio.
You should do that book festival. They would love you, and it also, just because anyone would love you, but also because there's such good food and they take such good care of you.
San Antonio does have good food. Houston has amazing food too, by the way.
Oh my God, yeah.
I do like San Antonio. I've only went to El Paso once because I was driving from LA to Houston when mm-hmm. I left LA initially. And I thought I could make the drive overnight, but my sister said, you're not going to drive in Texas overnight alone in the dark, which was actually because I'm fine in Houston, mm-hmm. but driving through Texas,
sad but true. Yes,
that
was dangerous.
That would have been dangerous.
Go to the OP? That El Paso used to have a gay club called it was OP, I believe, stood for Old Plantation.
I should have. Oh my God.
I believe. I'm going to look this up right now.
That's
was the gay club. And I remember going because although I didn't have any queer identity yet, it was, this is the thing, in El Paso. So they had this club because I lived nearby. I taught high school nearby. And so I went and it was like the most, it was. Oh, it's still there. Yeah, it's called the Old Plantation.
Which funny, the middle school that I was zoned to, I think they changed the name, but initially it was Dahlin Middle School. It was so bad, my mom was like, you're not allowed to go there. Mm-hmm. That's named after a Confederate.
Oh, God.
Yeah, so there's sprinkles of that still all over.
The Old Plantation nightclub in El Paso. But the most diverse place that I was in, because I was living in New Mexico teaching high school, it was the most diverse. I was like, diverse in terms of Mexican, black, white, and some Native American folks, too. And it was also, that night was like, it wasn't dyke night. It was mixed. It was like bisexuals, gays, lesbians, trans folks,
that's my Houston queer club experience.
It was so integrated. It was
interesting to me when you go to New York or somewhere else.
Yeah.
It's so separate and like it's very hostile between the communities.
Yes, but people don't know that.
I didn't realize that Houston, we're literally all together in Houston. I didn't necessarily maybe have the language, but even a middle school someone, Teddy. Teddy was always her nickname, and then she transitioned, and then I would see her at the club. I'm like, oh, hey, Teddy. And then I was like, that makes sense. It just was like a shrug.
Yeah, you're just kind of like, oh, we always knew that.
Okay. Yeah, because everyone, I had to, and I initially toxic masculine. I don't call me girl. I got over that real quick because this is like, my brother's gay. So he'd be like, hey, sis. I'm like, then you just let it go. But we were all, it was drag queens, it was trans folks, it was bi folks, it was lesbians. We were all in the same spot.
It was where if you were different, you went. If you were, if your sexuality or gender was other, it was different. Because I'm sure there were some at the OP, I bet there were some straight people, straight cis people who were like leather daddies and shit. Like, but like, or not leather, or like into BDSM.
But isn't it strange like to be in New York and it's the opposite. It's so separate. And sometimes
it's like you have to go to that. Like, this is this kind of BDSM club and this is this kind of dungeon and this is this. And I'm not a BDSM person. I just know a little bit about it from doing some research and once accidentally applied to be a secretary for somebody who ran one. Yeah. And I didn't realize, but it's cool. Like no shade to that at all. But it was like, people are so like, and this is where this kind of gay guy goes, and this is where this lesbian, and oh, you're, I mean, as a, you know, as a bisexual, as a woman, I already try to be, despite the fact that I'm a very brash person in many ways, I really try to walk with a lot of respect, understanding my own privilege and my own place, because I do know a lot of women who've been burned by girls who were just quote unquote experimenting and truly using them that way. Like, yeah. I really do. I know that's a stereotype, but I also know women who've had their hearts broken. So I try to be very careful and come with authenticity and, you know, probably a little too polite, but like, there's a lot of rivalries and weirdness.
Yeah.
I think some people think LGBTQ people everywhere are just like all hanging out in one place. But that's not how it is in like certain cities and other places. It's better.
I would say maybe sometimes in terms of, now I wouldn't even say even necessarily race, but because some of the, I guess the Montrose area, maybe some of the clubs would be more white queer people, but because there actually is like a booming black middle class state and people out like all over, you would still see black Latinx folks in those spaces too. And then you would just find queer spaces with more of that. But it would still always be diverse.
Which is
again,
cool.
There would be a divide sometimes, but if you were going to go in those spaces, it wouldn't be lily white. I've never been anywhere where it was lily white. But you can easily go in like New York or LA and that be the case.
Oh, absolutely. There's like specific spaces that are not just queer black spaces or queer white spaces, but like, you know, gay men.
Yeah, queer cis men. Like, and you can't come here.
It's like almost like a weird. It's weird. It's almost where we're like, like having the privilege of feeling free to be you and me, comes back around and fucks us up more.
A boy I wish I had sex with, but I probably fucked that up one. He told me a while ago, so I haven't actively, you know, talked to him. But he told me about a spot in Harlem. He said if a trans like woman entered this space, she probably would not feel comfortable. Hadn't thought of that. And that was when I actually went back and thought about Houston. That was my response. I was like, oh, well, now that you mention it, I haven't seen someone in this space. Because I really didn't go there that often. It's in Harlem. You go by sometimes and I like leave. I don't really hang out there. And I thought, like, oh, wow, you're right. And it made me think, well, because I was writing the book, so I had just mentioned Teddy. Like, oh, but in Houston, you know, we're all cramped together.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes it's like massive spaces and we're just all there. I hadn't thought about like that. That made me, when I really started thinking, like, wait, you know, and I would acknowledge like that was my privilege in that extent. Like, I didn't think about it normally, but I also didn't think about it necessarily because I was not being cognizant, but just in Houston, I was so used to it just being mixed. Mm-hmm. And you didn't. And that really did frame, like, I'm a late bloomer, but when I started going to gay clubs, I went out here, but definitely in Houston when I had to move back home twice, I was like, oh, everybody's here. And it was, no one ever thought anything. And I also realized how, you know, queer folks can fight. Because, I mean, I've had to fight, but, like, you know,
yeah.
Jazz beat in Houston. You say the wrong thing. It just beats that way. I love home.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for
spending
me.
All this time with me. I really just appreciate it. I know you're busy. I hope that you sell a million TV shows and a million movies and a million books and a symphony if you want to. I don't know. I just pulled that out of my ass. A painting, whatever you want. Like I, you know, at the risk of being a weirdo fangirl, like I really believe in what you do, and I find it very resonant and meaningful to a lot of people. So I'm so honored you would be here.
I'm honored you asked me. I'm a big fan of yours. I'm really happy. I hope I was a good interview. I hope I actually explained Houston a little bit.
You did.
Because I know I went all over the place.
You did great. You know, Houston's the first place I ever had grits.
Oh.
Ever. And I've had grits so many times since I was a little kid.
If you ever go, I used to fight grits for the longest, but whenever you go back to Houston, if you haven't been already, a place called The Breakfast Club.
I'm writing it down. The Breakfast Club. The Breakfast Club.
Breakfast Club, but
it's
with
like Angela Yee's.
The K with the, it's with a K.
Okay.
But it's amazing. There might be a little bit of a line, but they move fast. Those grits actually made me a believer because I used to be a little snotty when I was growing up.
You were a grit-theist.
Yes, a grit-theist, and I have since been reborn. The catfish and grits will send you over. Yes.
Thank you so much. Oh, and Michael, one last thing. Where can other people find your work? Besides I Can't Date Jesus, which is in stores everywhere.
I am, yes, please buy the book. You know, Young, the regular way, SINICK, Young Cynic. That's on Instagram and Twitter. I tend to tweet too much, but I'm trying to leave that place alone.
So I'll send
Instagram
so
more.
Much.
But yeah, I'm around. Arsenaux is ARCENEAUX because I know people need help with that name. I get it.
People get confused by Ben and Casa, and I understand. There's a lot of vowels.
Next or Arsenio.
Arsenio Ox.
Yeah. I've heard a lot of awful iterations of the name. At least you were trying to go for the proper French.
I was like, Michel Arsenio. Yeah. Well, thank you so much, Michael. And everybody, have a great freaking day wherever the hell you are. Maybe you're in your hometown or not. I don't know. It's a weird sign off, but I love you. Bye. Wasn't he great? He's freaking great. I know, right? I said it was great, and he's great. Michael Arsenault is fantastic. Purchase I Can't Date Jesus. You must, you must. You will love it. Follow him as Young Cynic, SINICK, on Twitter and on Instagram. You can follow me, Sarah J. Benincasa, on Twitter and on Instagram. And we are Where Ya From Pod on Twitter and on Instagram, hashtag Where Ya From Pod. As always, please rate, please subscribe, please tell your friends, all that good stuff so we get to keep making these. It's been so much fun. I hope you're as big a fan of Michael as I am now. I think you guys are great. Thank you so much for being here. I'll talk to you next time. Bye.